Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, an issue we simply have to discuss today. It's the unavoidable issue for our conversation, and as evangelicals, as Christians committed to the pro-life movement, there is one issue that now demands an answer. The murder in Wichita, Kansas, of Dr. George Tiller, infamous for being one of the very few doctors in America to perform very late third trimester abortions. The murder yesterday now raises the whole question in terms of the moral response of the pro-life community, the pro-life movement. I published early this morning, about 4 o'clock this morning, an article entitled "A Wicked Deed in Wichita, a Test for the Pro-Life Movement." Now, this particular issue, the murder of an abortion doctor, raises the most crucial issues that really face us in terms of the integrity of the pro-life movement. The bottom line of this is that there's no way to sustain a pro-life movement by taking lives. That is incompatible with the entire ethos, morality, and goal of the pro-life movement. The pro-life movement in America is doing what must be done in this generation to help Americans learn about the dignity and sanctity of every single human life, including the life of the unborn. Murdering an abortion doctor is not only an act that is criminal, it is not only an act that is unjustifiable, it is an act that does grave injury to the pro-life movement. We're going to be talking about this today on the Albert Mohler Program. I want to invite you to call, and with an unusual urgency, I want to tell you that this is the conversation we simply have to have. I sent out a message this morning as I published on Twitter. I sent out the notice of the publication of my article, and I made the issue very important there and focused where I said we have to be clear on this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. My article is about 1,100 words. There was a lot that had to be said. Regrettably, it's not the first article I've written on this subject because this is not the first murder of an abortion doctor in America. Estimates are in the news media that this is the fifth doctor. George Tiller was, of course, infamous, known as Tiller the baby killer in some circles, because of his central role in making abortion available to those where even the rest of the medical community would not dare to go. And so Wichita, Kansas became the destination of choice for those determined to end their pregnancy and to have an abortion when the baby was very near to being born. The issues of abortion are probably never more graphically displayed than in the life and in the work of George Tiller. But it was not in the hands of any human being to act unilaterally here. This was not a governmental act. This was not a doctor who was arrested and brought before the system of justice. This was a unilateral act taken by a citizen who had no right to take the act. And in the name, presumably, of saving lives, he set the pro-life movement back a great deal. It requires of us an answer. Scott Roeder has been arrested as the suspect in this case. He was known, according to press reports, and these look to be legitimate, as a man who believes that killing an abortion doctor is justifiable. It is said that he was known to hold that belief. Now, of course, it looks like he has acted on that belief. Folks, I want to know what you're thinking about this. There's some obvious questions to ask. I tried to deal with them in my article, and we will deal with them on the air today. This is one of those times when I just need to say to you as a radio audience, if you have a question about this, if there's a nagging question in your mind about this, if you're unclear about this, give me a call. If there's an argument you want to make, this is the place to make it. And it is important that we deal with these things in a responsible way. I trust you as a radio audience to be up to that task. I pray that I will be up to that task because the world and the rest of America is waiting to see what the pro-life movement is going to say in response to this. My article, I believe, is now up at the Washington Post online, and it will be available in other sources as well. You can get it right now by going to albertmohler.com. We're glad to hear from you by email. Write us at mail@albertmohler.com. And we're glad to hear from you just in terms of what you're thinking about this. and what you think we got to talk about this. The phone number, 877-893-8255. We'll get back to this in just a moment. There's plenty of other news, unfortunately, that we must discuss. An Air France passenger jet flying from Rio de Janeiro to Paris disappeared this morning. It is presumed to have crashed. It is believed that its electrical systems malfunctioned in heavy turbulence during a violent thunderstorm over the Atlantic. Officials in both Brazil and France said that a search had begun for wreckage across a great deal of the Atlantic Ocean. Some 3 hours after the flight began in Rio, it disappeared. The last vocal communication was at about 10:30. That was 3 hours after takeoff. Pierre-Henri Gurgeon, who is the chief executive of Air France KLM, said, quote, Air France is extremely distraught and the whole team of Air France is suffering, end quote. French President Nicolas Sarkozy said, quote, it's a tragic accident. The chances of finding survivors are tiny, end quote. The airliner in question was an Airbus 330-200 carrying 216 passengers, 9 cabin crew members, 3 pilots, 32 nationalities on the plane. It is believed that there were at least 2 Americans, even though most of the passengers were Brazilian or European. Folks, this is just another reminder that life is short. And sometimes it's a great deal shorter than we imagine. It now looks like there's almost no chance that anyone survived this crash. Certainly by now, the airliner would long ago have run out of fuel, and there's been no word now for hours and hours. So our prayers are with the families of those who are here involved, and we'll be waiting for news. This is another one of those accidents, that is likely to change the face of aviation. It was believed that given modern aviation and avionics and technology and engineering, that it was unlikely airliners would fall apart in the midst of a storm. But if indeed these pilots flew right into the heart of a violent thunderstorm, the kind of storm that modern avionics are supposed to reveal so that pilots do not fly into them, it could have been what we are now told was a very, very immediate catastrophe. Another catastrophe of a very different sort took place in the United States, where the largest automaker in American history, General Motors, filed today for bankruptcy. Just one sign of how the world has changed around us over the last several months in terms of this economic turmoil. Just think about the fact that if you've been told a year ago that General Motors, of all companies, General Motors would be declaring bankruptcy, you would have been shocked probably beyond belief. Now it is not only plausible, it has happened. And on the other side of this, we now know that the American taxpayer will be the largest stakeholder in the new company that is to be the rescue of General Motors as a corporation. It's going to be smaller, undoubtedly leaner. It will have fewer product lines. And at this point, it belongs to the American people. And the reality is that I do not believe that a corporation can survive under this kind of experimentation for long. Citizen ownership, public government ownership of a corporation like this just cannot be good. So we have to hope for the sake of this nation, not for General Motors so much as a corporation, but for the human beings involved, for the employees of the company, for the pension holders of the company, for citizens in the United States. We are all linked in a giant economic system in which General Motors has played such a central part for a very, very long time. You're going to be hearing a lot about this. The reality is going to be sinking in, probably case by case, person by person, over the successive weeks and months as the breakup and bankruptcy of one of America's largest corporations. At one point back in the 1950s, General Motors itself represented about 6% of the gross national product of the United States. Just think about that. And now it has declared bankruptcy. A lot out there in the news that really does deserve our attention. And when you start thinking about many things out there, let me give you a hopeful piece of news. USA Today is out with a report. Here's the headline: profound shift in homeschooling. Numbers and parents' income are growing. This is a report from the Department of Education which indicates that the homeschooling population is changing in the sense that there are more wealthy families, upper-income families, that are deciding to homeschool. It's no longer the province of those who do not have other economic options for education. It is now the preferred choice of education, even for those who could easily afford other options. Homeschooling has grown most sharply, according to this report and the summary in USA Today, for higher-income families. In 1999, 63.6% of homeschooling families earned less than $50,000. Now that has reversed, and 60% earn more than $50,000. Really, really interesting. One of the other shifts we're going to be looking at in this, and we'll be talking about this report in days to come, is the fact that there are now a good many more girls homeschooled than boys. Some believe this may be tied to the fact there are many boys who want to be involved in team sports in schools, but it's another one of those questions that now demands an answer. Why that particular imbalance? Folks, Wichita, Kansas is ground central for one of the great moral questions of our age. If you are one committed to the sanctity of human life, and I certainly hope that you are, here's the question we all have to answer. What are we going to say about the murder of George Tiller? My word is going to be simple. You can't serve the pro-life movement by a criminal act of murder. We'll continue this conversation when we come back. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
The news is shocking, however you look at it. The murder in Wichita, Kansas of Dr. George Tiller in the foyer of his church, Reformation Lutheran Church there in Wichita, on a Sunday morning is the kind of thing that is certain to grab headlines, and for good reason. Here you're looking at a cold-blooded, premeditated murder. And in this case, the victim of this murder is one who himself was infamous already, especially in the pro-life movement, as one of the most notorious abortion doctors in America. George Tiller, for about three decades, has been so highly involved in the abortion movement and in the abortion industry. To be very clear about why he is infamous, he has been skirting the law for three decades or more, performing abortions that virtually no other doctor in America would perform, especially those at the very latest moments and weeks of pregnancy, deep into the third trimester. And for that reason, he has been known within the pro-life movement by such monikers as Tiller the Baby Killer. Now he is dead. And according to authorities there in Wichita, a suspect by the name of Scott Roeder, who was known in anti-abortion circles as a man who believes that killing an abortion doctor is justifiable, he is the suspect, 51 years of age. He and others had expressed support for their view that lethal force is not a criminal offense if it protects the lives of unborn children. Folks, that's an argument we just have to lay bare and expose and refute right now. The entire moral credibility of the pro-life movement hangs on our determination to be very clear that that is an illegitimate, unchristian, unjustifiable argument. I want to tell you why. It's not because Tiller was not involved in the killing of human beings. He was deeply involved, publicly involved, notoriously involved in the murder of unborn human beings, unborn children. But it's not the fact, nonetheless, that this man deserved to die at the hands of a vigilante. It is indeed the fact that it is a moral atrocity that Scott Roeder, if he is indeed the man who did this, or whomever performed this act, did so. It is now a scandal that will threaten to undo the integrity of the pro-life movement if we do not respond to it in a way that meets moral muster. So let's be clear. We have no right to take the law into our own hands in an act of criminal violence. The way to correct, the way to put an end to the atrocity of abortion is not by means of violence. We have no right to take this power into our own hands. God has granted this power to governing authorities. The horror of abortion cannot be rightly confronted by means of violence and acts outside the law and lawful means of remedy. This is not a mere legal technicality. This is a vital test of the morality of the pro-life movement. Now, folks, there's good news here in the fact that the Christian church has thought through these issues. But the church has been forced by necessity to think through these issues again and again. The church has reached a basic moral consensus on issues of violence and governmental obedience. And this consensus requires that Christians and Christian citizens work within legal, judicial, and political means to persuade governing authorities concerning what is good, right, just, and honoring to God. Those who operate outside of this consensus and perform acts of violence are rightly understood to arrogate authority themselves in a way that violates not only the laws of men, but the law of God. Civil disobedience may be justified so long as the Christian is willing to suffer at the hands of the governing authorities, but it is not justified if the citizen employs violence against the state or against other citizens. In the case of Dr. George Tiller, the governing authorities failed again and again to fulfill their responsibility to protect all citizens, including those yet unborn. The law as it now stands, is dishonoring to God in its disrespect for human life. The law failed to bring George Tiller to account for what should have been seen as crimes against humanity. But this failure does not authorize others to act in the place of the government, much less in the place of God. The government must now act to prosecute and punish the murderer of Dr. George Tiller. Now, in the article I published at albertmiller.com this morning, I draw the parallel between what this murderer has done and John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry in 1859. John Brown's cause, the abolition of slavery, was just. John Brown's tactics were despicable, treasonous, murderous, and it led to his execution at the hands of the United States government. Folks, what we're looking at here is a crucial moral test. There are those, and I'm glad to say they are very few in number and very far on the fringe, who would make the argument that this kind of murder might be justifiable. That's an argument we have to confront immediately in its face and put it to rest for the moral atrocity that it is. I don't believe, by the way, and I'm thankful for this, that most of the people who say that mean it. But nonetheless, some of them evidently do mean it. And we all now bear the responsibility, those of us who contend for the sanctity of every single human life, we now bear the responsibility to be clear about this murder, which was, as I said in the article, a wicked deed in Wichita. The phone number to join this conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Ray is listening on WRBS. What do you think, Ray?
Hey, Dr. Mueller, thanks for taking my call. I listen to you all the time. I couldn't agree with you even more. I know where the guy's coming from. He feels like, you know, by doing this, he's going to stop something, but it's not. They're just going to go somewhere else. And what he's done is just put the pro-life movement on the same side as the pro-abortion movement. It's just something just untolerable, and like you said, it's going to put a big, big kink in the pro-life movement.
You know, there's an incredible arrogance here, Ray. I appreciate your point. This man has arrogated to himself authority that God gives to government. And the audacity of this is just breathtaking. This man has made himself literally judge, jury, and executioner, where God has invested this very clearly. For instance, just to take one text in Romans chapter 13, God has invested this in the government. Now, Christians have had to face some real hard questions about when a government is for instance, delegitimated, completely robbed of its legitimacy. When there's an opportunity or obligation for an act of moral necessity. But by no means can any of those arguments be employed here in any rational or credible way. The fact that we're having this conversation demonstrates that. This is the way we win hearts and souls, is by making the argument for the sanctity of human life, not by killing abortion doctors, bombing abortion clinics, or taking upon ourselves, arrogating to ourselves, the right and responsibility that is invested in government. Thanks for your call, Ray. Let's go to Margaret calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Margaret, what are you thinking?
Dr. Mueller, I think in light of the gospel, it's not our place to take another person's life, especially thinking of, in light of the gospel, that the Apostle Paul killed Christians and he approved of the stoning of Stephen. And who knows what George Tiller's life could have come to. He could have come to know Christ and been a leader for the gospel. And his acts were grievous, but it is not our place to take the gospel, to take someone's life, but only God.
Yeah, you know, Margaret, I appreciate that argument, and I think it's really important that we define who the we would be in this case, because I agree with you wholeheartedly when the we means individual citizens or non-governmental authorities. If for us to do that, for we to take an act like this on ourselves would be an act of audacity, arrogating to ourselves the responsibility that God has given to government. The we that is, on the other hand, important here is the government, we the people. The government does have a responsibility to punish the wrongdoer, to protect the defenseless, and to execute justice. The government has really failed in that responsibility in terms of putting an end to the scourge and horror of abortion. But that does not give then individual citizens the right to take that power for themselves. Margaret, thanks for your call as well. Folks, to join the conversation, give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, coast to coast, and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We are discussing the murder of Dr. George Tiller in Wichita, Kansas. Now a great moral challenge to the pro-life movement, one that we have to settle very clearly and establish as a cruel, premeditated homicide for which this man deserves to be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. In fact, we have to insist that government has the obligation now to prosecute this man to the fullest extent of the law. We have to make very clear that his action was morally unjustified, that indeed it was so unjustified that it is beyond the pale of legitimate justification. This is not one of those gray areas. This is one of those very clear issues in which he is clearly wrong. There's a lot to discuss here, and there are a lot of people that have some head-scratching kind of questions. What does this mean? How do we think this through? The phone number to raise those questions in a responsible way is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. You cannot serve the pro-life movement by taking lives. That's perhaps the shortest version of the argument that I know. Let's go to Dan calling from Spring Mills, Pennsylvania, listening on WTLR. What are you thinking, Dan?
Good afternoon, Dr. Mohler. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. I do agree that the murder of Mr. Tiller was wrong. And my struggle is, and I'd like to hear your comments, please, on a comparison between this issue and Pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was a Lutheran pastor in Germany during World War II, and the three different attempts that he, as well as a couple of other men on his team, made to assassinate Adolf Hitler for murdering Jews.
Yeah, that's a very, very intelligent question, Dan, and I appreciate it. As a matter of fact, I wrote about that specifically linked to the issue of the abortion movement in an article I published back in September of 2003. We'll put the link up to that article at the website so that others can see it and can consider. But let me just respond to your question. It is a very intelligent question because when we look back at World War II, indeed, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, one of the most morally insightful pastors of that day, not someone I admire for his understanding of the gospel, but someone I do admire for his moral courage and moral clarity in thinking about the Christian response to Hitler and the Nazi regime. Dietrich Bonhoeffer did take the action of complicity in an effort to assassinate Adolf Hitler. It was an unsuccessful effort, and by the way, he was executed at the Flossenbürg concentration camp just days before it was liberated by the Allies. Great loss. But nonetheless, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, even in taking that action, declared it to be what he called a borderland question. He described this moral borderland where he said, sometimes it is hard to know, excruciatingly hard to know what is right and what is wrong, but one must take acts of necessity. That's a very important category in Christian moral thinking, acts of necessity. An act of necessity is always necessary. Otherwise, it wouldn't be an act of necessity. Bonhoeffer did what he thought was the best he knew to do at the time. Now, why is that different than the taking of the life of Dr. George Tiller? Well, it's different in this very, very crucially important way. And folks, listen carefully to this, please. Dietrich Bonhoeffer took the action he did because he had come to the conclusion, and I believe it was the correct conclusion, that the entire regime, the entire government of which Adolf Hitler was the head, was delegitimated because of its use of power, its murderous intention, and its refusal to be corrected by means of moral suasion. So let's be clear about that. Dietrich Bonhoeffer did not merely decide to break the law by attempting to assassinate Adolf Hitler. He did not make a simple mathematical calculation. I killed this one man, I save who knows how many more lives. He came to the conclusion, first of all, and this is crucial in their moral decision-making, that the Nazi regime is an evil regime. It is an uncorrectable, unpersuadable regime. It is a regime that no longer deserves the respect of a rightful government, and thus it is to be opposed not only at the top, but at every level. In other words, the only way you can consistently come to that conclusion is to defy the regime at every level, to defy the government at every level. And Dietrich Bonhoeffer did that, along with many others who bravely in the confessing church stood for what was right over against those who were engaged in complicity with this evil regime. Now, here's the issue. Is there anyone who would seriously make the argument that in the United States of America, we confront a government that is a hopelessly uncorrectable, evil, delegitimated regime? I do not believe so. And by the way, the fact that I'm speaking to you on the airwaves is a very clear sign that this is not a regime that has refused all correction, all efforts at moral suasion. We still have the opportunity to reach the American people and indeed to speak to the American government through the legislative and judicial process concerning the sanctity of human life, and that's the right way to do it. We do not now stand where Dietrich Bonhoeffer then stood. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. This is a very important discussion, and I'm glad to share it with you today, but I'm tragically saddened by the fact that that we have to talk about this particular issue at this time. This is the kind of thing we just hope and pray doesn't happen, but it did in Wichita, Kansas. Someone who would claim to be allied to the pro-life movement, shot and killed, murdered Dr. George Tiller, very, very infamous abortion doctor in Wichita, Kansas, as he stood in the foyer of his church, Reformation Lutheran Church there in Wichita, handing out bulletins and serving as an usher. Now, on my website at albertmohler.com, I published an article. It's up, by the way, now at On Faith at the Washington Post and Newsweek site. And it'll be fascinating to see what kind of comments accumulate there. But nonetheless, the argument is straightforward and clear. There is no real question here about the moral illegitimacy of this man's actions. That is, the suspect is Scott Rader, whether he did it or not. Roeder, whether he did it or not. Whether it was someone else, we simply always have to couch that in the terms of having a suspect arrested. But nonetheless, whoever took this act did so in a way that is not morally questionable. It's morally wrong. In the name of combating a moral evil, he committed a moral evil, and he set back the pro-life movement by putting us all in a position where we have to respond to this in a very clear way. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky. Ted is also listening on WFIA. What are you thinking, Ted?
Dr. Mohler, I'm very troubled. I hate that he was murdered. I hate what he's done to our pro-life movement. However, I'm more troubled by the fact that I'm not troubled that he's gone, and I'm actually somewhat relieved that he's been stopped.
Yeah, well, let me tell you why you shouldn't feel that way, Ted, and I understand. I appreciate your honesty in calling. You know, this is one of those situations in which you can be guaranteed there will be someone very quickly to take his place. It is not as if this will stop even one abortion. This is a situation that in all likelihood will even strengthen the resolve of those in the abortion industry to make such, they will call them, services. That's a moral atrocity in itself, but nonetheless, they will redouble their efforts to make sure that this happens. You know, when you start looking at this, you say, all right, we want abortion to come to an end. We want every abortion clinic to close. We want not only for abortion to be ended, we want not only for abortion to be made illegal, we want to reach to the hearts of Americans so that they would not seek an abortion, such that babies would be seen not as something to be rid of, but rather as precious gifts to be received. Now, if the issue is what we really aim for in the pro-life movement, then this doesn't help. And it's true that here is one abortion doctor who will not be committing another abortion. He'll not perform another murderous act on an unborn human being in the womb. But I actually don't believe there will be one fewer abortion because of this. And even if there were, I would have to come back and say, that's the wrong moral calculus. An act that is wrong is categorically morally wrong. And, you know, Ted, as much as we in the pro-life movement want to see every doctor who performs abortions stop it, there is no way that stopping it this way is going to help. And just as we know, you know, our mothers taught us this when we were in the crib. And that is that you can't answer one immoral act with another immoral act. Now, that doesn't mean that Christians never respond with some kind of force. It doesn't mean that we never respond with moral outrage and moral indignation. It doesn't mean that we do not respond with the candor that calls things what they are. It does mean that we do not arrogate to ourselves the power that God has given to government. And when we do so, we find ourselves forced into a conversation just like this. When someone does something like this, and this man was on the far fringe, and who knows what we'll discover about this man, we do know this. We're talking about him today because he made George, this is the worst part of this from a moral perspective, by his murderous deed, by his unethical, illegal, unjustifiable deed, by his violent deed, is supposedly in the name of saving life, he made this infamous doctor a victim. And that is in itself a moral atrocity. And he is a real victim here. He's been victimized by an act of murder. His family has been victimized. His church there in Wichita has been victimized. We have all been victimized because an act like this is one that is an act against all of humanity. And to do this in the name of the pro-life movement just adds insult to moral injury. So, Ted, I with you, want to see every single abortion doctor stop performing abortions. I want to see every abortion clinic closed. But the reality is that's only going to happen through legitimate means. It can't happen by other means. It simply won't. And when you put that into the moral calculus, you realize, you know, that you do not have in the pro-life movement any other option than to reach the hearts and minds of Americans. We do not have any other mechanism. And I think we better recognize that we do not have any other mechanism. Now, that involves reaching the hearts and minds of legislators, yes. It means reaching the hearts and minds of judges, yes. It means reaching the hearts and minds of policymakers and bureaucrats, yes. But it means, first of all, reaching the hearts and minds of Americans. Not only in our desire and heartfelt concern to see abortion made no longer available, but to see abortion made no longer desired. That's the more crucial argument. That's the greater challenge for us. This man, whoever he is, who committed this act, has made that challenge so much more, excruciatingly more difficult, because now we have to talk about his act rather than the act of abortion. And that's what frustrates me. I guarantee you I did not intend to have this discussion. When we ended radio last week, I had no idea we would be having this discussion today. I got home from church yesterday and was confronted with this news. And here we are talking about it because we have to talk about it. We're now morally obligated to talk about it. I want to thank the callers who called in today. And I'll tell you that I have been troubled by some of what I've received in terms of email. I'm glad to say that almost all the response that I've received thus far to my article agrees with the moral reasoning. That's good news. But many of them are asking questions about how they respond to people who are asking, why was this wrong? Well, let's get that right, and let's get it right fast. I hope my article helps. I'd love to hear from you what you think as you actually go through the process of the hard thinking on an issue as important as this. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. Write me at mail@albertmiller.com. We'll be right back with final thoughts. You're listening there to the music of Franz Joseph Haydn, his famous work, The Creation, The Heavens Are Telling the Glory of God. Franz Joseph Haydn was born March 31, 1732. He died 200 years ago yesterday, May 31, 1809. You're talking about one of the most famous and important composers in the history of classical music. He, in many ways, is credited with developing the sonata as well as the string quartet. And he wrote over 100 symphonies, is known in some circles as the father of the symphony as well. Very, very interesting. This is a young man who at the age of six, that's right, six, was taken away from his parents because of his musical genius and trained. And he was later a boy chorister. At the age of 17, his voice broke and his father had to decide what his future would be. And he was able to go into music. He became a very talented composer, as we now know, a Kapellmeister. And he also was an early sponsor of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, and they highly admired one another. It's not known, really, in terms of many parts of his life. It's really not known too much about his own faith. However, he was a servant of the church, and of course, much of his music was devoted to the church. He was also a man of the Enlightenment, and he was perhaps one of the most quintessential men of the Enlightenment of the 18th century. His music has a certain joy to it that is undeniable. He was—he spent a good deal of his life in Hungary, but he was Austrian in terms of his work, as was, of course, Mozart. Austria being the heart and Vienna being the capital of so much of the classical music that we enjoy today. But we're talking about a man who really saw the glory of God in creation. That song that you heard, those very familiar refrains of the heavens telling the glory of God— go back to the fact that Franz Joseph Haydn was convinced that to look to creation was to see the glory of God. I had an incredible experience a few years ago when I was going from one speaking event to the other. I was alone in a car driving on the Blue Ridge Parkway, a thunderstorm on one side of the ridge and a sunset on the other. I was listening to Franz Joseph Haydn's The Creation as I drove along. I have to tell you, that was an incredible experience. If you don't listen to classical music, if you do not know classical music and you don't know where to start, well, 200 years after the death of Franz Joseph Haydn, let me suggest to you, you get a good recording of The Creation and enjoy it. Because ultimately, as is true of The Creation itself, it's not about the creation. It's about the Creator. The heavens are telling the glory of God. Folks, we had to have a difficult discussion today about a difficult issue. I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank you for participating in this. It's not over. The conversation's not over when we come to the end of the hour. We're glad to hear from you. Send me a message by email, Facebook, Twitter. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.